Percy Jackson and the Olympians is filled to the brim with references to Greek mythology that are both obvious and obscure. Today, I'm combing through episode 5 to break down every single one. Myth 1, The Fates. Episode 5 opens immediately after Percy's fight with the Chimera. A big crowd, along with the police and firemen, have surrounded the St. Louis Arch, and the three Fates sit there knitting some socks while giving Grover and Annabeth the death stare. And props to Disney for managing to squeeze in so many of their target demographics into one frame. In Greek mythology, the Fates are actually pretty complicated in comparison to other goddesses, so if you want a really detailed breakdown, I recommend you check out my video on their messed up origins, but we can cover the basics here. So the Fates are the three daughters of Zeus and Themis, the goddess of law and justice. Together, they personify the inescapable destiny of man, which is pretty chill. What that means is they assign every person his or her role in the overarching story of the world. So when a person is born, the Fates spin a thread of their future life that includes all of the decisions that person will make and the consequences of those decisions. In other words, every single one of us mere mortals are subject to their will. And so are the gods, believe it or not. The Fates had the privilege of existing outside the main power structure of Olympus, and even assigned the Olympians fates at times. For example, they assigned Artemis the responsibility of coming to the aid of women giving birth, and Athena was destined to remain a virgin thanks to them. Zeus himself could sway their decisions occasionally, considering he was their dad and king of the cosmos, but 99% of the time, events went down exactly how the Fates wanted them to. The three elderly-looking goddesses each had a name and a particular job as well. There's Lachesis, the allotter, who measured the thread and assigned each human their identity. Clotho was the spinner, and she spun the thread of life from her distaff onto her spindle. And then there's Atropos, the inflexible, she who cannot be turned. She was the Fate who used the shears to cut the thread of life when a being's time was up, and we see her do exactly that in the show. My question is, whose thread were they cutting? Ooh, spooky. Myth 2, the God of War. After our heroes escape the chaos of the Arch, they meet the one and only God of War on a long and lonesome country road. And I'm not talking about Kratos, thank the gods. If it were Kratos, and he knew what they were up to, I think he would have killed them. I know, it sounds intense, but when you think about it, they're trying to give Zeus his most powerful weapon back, and that's not something Kratos would have allowed to happen. It's possible he would have tried reasoning with them at first, but you know Percy wouldn't have backed down, which is admirable, but against young Kratos, there's only one way that story ends. Anyway, this isn't Kratos, it's Ares, and he just had to involve himself on their journey. And for the record, I love this portrayal of Ares. He's my favorite character in the show by far. He's loud, he's brash, he's rude as all hell.
I hate kids. All of them. I hate my own kids.
It's a perfect encapsulation of what Ares would be like in day-to-day interactions.
So do we have a deal, or am I killing all three of you so I can eat in peace?
Because while Ares was the personification of war, he specifically embodied war's destructive capacity, the violence, brutality, and bloodshed. Meanwhile, his sister Athena is the goddess of war, but wisdom is another one of her domains, so the specific aspects of war she presides over are military strategy and leadership, aspects that we humans find positive and respectable.
If she's so smart, explain the owl. She talks to it, like, all the time, this fat, nasty little feathered rodent, and it's like her best friend, and we're so sure that she's a genius and I, no owl, am not.
It's no wonder that Ares hates her so much. Not only does she get all of mankind's love despite them sharing a domain, if you know the mythology, then you know that Athena made him look like the god of clowns on multiple occasions. Like when the monster Typhon attacked Olympus as part of the Titans' last-ditch effort to dethrone Zeus, Ares actually ran away in fear with the rest of the Olympians. But in some versions, Athena stayed by her father's side to fight the would-be usurper, so Ares was looking pretty cowardly by comparison. There's also a Heracles myth where he was attacked by Ares' son Cycnus and ended up killing him right in front of Ares, which naturally enraged the god of war. When Ares threw his spear at the hero, it would have been a bullseye, but Athena got involved and influenced the spear to miss its target, allowing Heracles to throw it back at Ares and impale him in the leg. As if it couldn't get any worse, this caused Ares so much pain that his sons Phobos and Deimos showed up to escort him to Olympus, which had to be pretty humiliating. But I think the time she embarrassed him the most had to be during the Trojan War. See, early in the conflict, Zeus told the Olympians they could not get involved, but Ares tried to anyway by showing up on the battlefield. Athena, who was anticipating this and a little smarter than her brother, was also there, but wearing her helm of invisibility. While riding with the hero Diomedes in his chariot, she told him to attack Ares with his spear. So he did. And once again, the wounds caused Ares so much pain, he had to retreat to Olympus. And if you thought Ares, the personification of violence, pain, and the loss of human life, was just going to let this disrespect slide, you would be wrong. But ultimately right in the end. Because years later, when Zeus finally allowed the gods to intervene in the war, Ares tried ambushing Athena. But she easily overpowered him and took him out with a boulder. Poor god just can't catch a break. You know who can catch a break, though? You. Thanks to today's sponsor, Squarespace. Designing a website probably sounds like an intimidating venture, not unlike Percy's quest to return the Master Bowl. But Squarespace has all the tools you need to design a beautiful website easily and affordably, no matter how new to web design you are. To start, they give you a huge selection of award-winning templates to choose from, and thanks to their Fluid engine, you don't have to do any coding. Just drag and drop wherever you please. Whether your goal is to market your business, show off your art portfolio, or treat your followers to exclusive content, you can make it happen with Squarespace. They also give you access to marketing tools and analytics so you can capitalize on trends and check your website's performance. And on the rare occasion you run into a problem, their customer support team is available 24/7 to fix it fast. So if you want to take your small business, side hustle, or passion project to the next level, go to squarespace.com/johnsolo to start a free trial. And when your site is ready for launch, use code johnsolo to get 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Myth 3, the rise of the Olympians. While our heroes are at the diner, Ares makes a reference to the Greek creation myth, saying,
"See, years before I was born, my grandpa Cronos ate my aunts and uncles. Yeah. Then my dad made him puke them back up, then chopped him into a million pieces and chucked him into a bottomless pit." So that kind of set the tone right out of the gate.
Now, I was debating whether or not I should elaborate further on this because I think that most of the people here are pretty familiar with the creation story. But when I started this series, I had it in mind that I was going to explain every single myth they referenced. So, Zeus, damn it, that's what I want to do. Now, the reason that Cronos went around swallowing all of his kids whole was because of a prophecy that his mother told him. Gaia said that Cronos' offspring would one day dethrone him, just like he did to his father Uranus, so he ate his kids to stop that from happening. The only one he didn't eat was Zeus, because after Rhea's first five children suffered the same slobbery fate, she switched Zeus out for a little rock. Apparently, that's how little Cronos was paying attention, and she had her son raised in secret until he was strong enough to take on his father. Zeus managed to sneak Cronos in a medic potion that caused him to throw up his five children, who had apparently all been living and growing to their full size inside his stomach, and then the 10-year war between the Olympians and Titans began. When all was said and done and Zeus and his siblings came out the victors, they threw the Titans into the deepest pits in Tartarus and sealed them in with gates of bronze to ensure they could never escape. This tracks almost exactly with Ares' story, but I will say that I couldn't find any ancient text that describes Cronos as being chopped into a thousand little pieces like he does. I'm not saying it doesn't exist, I may have just missed it in my research, but it's also possible that this was a detail that Riordan added, or maybe it was part of a modern retelling of the story that's been repeated so many times that it's just become an accepted part of the story now. Such is the nature of folklore and myth, after all. Myth 4, Hephaestus's Revenge. In order for our heroes to receive Ares' help and secure passage all the way to the west coast, he tells them they have to complete a side quest and retrieve his shield from Waterland, a seemingly abandoned amusement park. Once there, Percy and Annabeth take a cruise down the Tunnel of Love and are treated to a pretty entertaining light show that tells the sad story of Hephaestus, the Greek god of fire and craftsmanship. There are two myths referenced at this point, but first I want to focus on Hephaestus' revenge and his ascension to godhood on Olympus. I'm going to give you the short version now, but if you want to hear the whole thing, I have an animated episode of Messed Up Tales that you can check out. Link below. Basically, Hephaestus was immaculately conceived by Hera, who was jealous when Zeus gave birth to Athena without her help. But when Hera saw how pitiful and ugly her son was, she threw him off Olympus and never thought about him again. One day, when an ornate golden throne addressed to the queen showed up on Olympus, she was ecstatic, probably assuming this was a gift from her beloved as a way of apologizing for swallowing his pregnant ex-wife whole and then giving birth to their child out of his forehead. Talk about ambrosia problems. You know how people use the term champagne problems to describe situations that are inconvenient but not really problems compared to what the sick and impoverished have to deal with? Well, there's a step above that, and I'm coining it right now. Ambrosia problems. These are hyper-specific issues that only gods have to deal with. Like when you invite a king over to dinner and he wants to see if you really are all-knowing, so he kills his own son and tries to serve him to you as meatloaf. What, that hasn't happened to you guys? Exactly, because it's an ambrosia problem. So Hera wanted to test her throne out, but the moment those divine cheeks touched the seat, they were stuck there. Restraints burst out of the throne's arms and legs, wrapping themselves around the queen. And the strength of all the other Olympians combined was not enough to free her. If you want to hear the rest of the story in detail, check out that episode I mentioned. I'm really proud of it. But for today's purposes, that's really all you need to know, besides this one other detail I'm going to spoil. That throne was designed by Hephaestus. If you've seen this episode of Percy Jackson, you probably already realize that though, because after Percy sits on the throne, knowing full well it's going to trap him there, Hephaestus comes out to do a little taunting. But ultimately, he gives in to Annabeth's pleas and frees Percy. Funnily enough, something similar happens in the original myth, though it's not quite as kid-friendly. Myth 5, Love and War. So if you were paying attention during Hephaestus' light show, you'll remember seeing a cute little cartoon Ares walk off with Aphrodite and leave poor Hephaestus heartbroken. Well, this happens in myth too, but if you don't know how Hephaestus finds out about their love affair, I've gotta tell ya. As you know, Heph was a master craftsman, and when he suspected that his wife wasn't loyal, he invented a way to confirm it and humiliate her in the process, leaking her DMs. Just kidding. The next time that Hephaestus left home to go to his workshop, he laid his trap. So when Aphrodite and Ares got busy in their bed, a net fell on them, pinning them to the bed in full view of the other gods. The worst part was that net was woven so finely that it was invisible to even the godly eye, so the two lovers couldn't figure out how to take it off, blessing the Olympians with a divine comedy. Hephaestus had no problem leaving them there to be embarrassed for all eternity, but after the mocking had been going on for a while, Poseidon started to feel bad and bribed Hephaestus to free them. I'm not sure if that exact situation goes down in the Disney canon, but I'm willing to bet they never address it. Anyway, after the light show is when Percy and Annabeth find the throne, retrieve Ares' shield, deliver it to him, and he rewards them by putting them in a shipping container that'll bring them to the Lotus Casino in Las Vegas. Lotus Casino is yet another reference to a myth, but I'll talk about that next time. I know it's been a little while since I've done one of these breakdowns. I took a break for a few weeks, but I'm back now and we'll be posting these inconsistently for the next month or two. I'll be honest, I love making these episodes, but only a fraction of our community actually watches them. So I gotta reserve Thursdays for the more demanded Messed Up Origins content, and I'll just post these whenever I get the time. Take that, sunk cost fallacy. I'll be honest, I love making these episodes, but only a fraction of our community actually watches them. So I gotta reserve Fridays for the more demanded Messed Up Origins content, and I'll just post these whenever I get the time. I'll see you all again Friday when we dive deep into some Egyptian mythology. Until then, my name is John Solo, and remember, John shot first.